The award-winning, the AP award-winning Schilling Show continues here on News Radio 1070 WINA, and I'm always pleased to welcome David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management, today joined by Megan Russell, the chief operating officer of Murata Wealth Management. And we're talking about graduates here at graduation time, employers, and the job market. Gosh, I remember graduating all those years ago out of Cal Poly Pomona and not really having any idea what I was going to do. I had some job offers. I had some very nice lady, kind of a grandmotherly lady, who wanted to hire me to work at a bank. And she thought I would be terrific for the bank. And I'm so glad I ran from that job offer, although I was flattered to receive it. It was definitely not me. I knew it at the time. I think my parents were upset. But it brings to mind this time of year when many people are facing that situation. So David and Megan, welcome to the Schilling Show.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. So let's talk, first of all, in general about America's employment climate. What is it like out there for people who are seeking jobs?
Well, I find it's actually difficult today for a number of reasons. One is that the baby boom generation won't leave their jobs. They haven't prepared enough for retirement, and so they're actually not retiring at the rates that everyone thought they were going to retire. And so since our generation is hanging on to its jobs longer, there's less openings for the young people who are graduating. And I think the environment is a little bit harder than it's been. Maybe you'd have to go all the way back to the early 1980s to find a time when it's been as hard as it is right now.
That was pretty rough. You know, I look at this graying of the workforce, and I go into a lot of places now that had jobs that were previously, at least I would associate them with younger people. You know, I go into Lowe's now, and I see a lot of seniors working at Lowe's, which I love because I think they provide superior customer service. But I do see a difference in the workforce.
Yeah, the companies today have had what's called a jobless recovery, meaning they've been able to get their profits back up where they need to be by cutting workforce and figuring out ways to not hire people, because people are expensive, and there's a lot of policies we have in the United States that make young people even more expensive, healthcare being one of them. We require healthcare. Young people don't need healthcare. It's all the aging baby boomers that need healthcare. Young people would be glad to have a job with no health care if you just pay them whatever you're going to pay them for their health care, because their health care costs are very, very minimal.
The other thing, and you bring up health care, we had a small businessman in here yesterday, Dargan Cogshall, who was talking about his Obamacare nightmare, how he was forced out of his own health care, his private market health care, even though he was promised by the president directly that he would be able to keep it, as all of us were. And what a disaster it's been for him, but how it brought about this choice. Am I going to expand my business, or am I going to have to put these extra resources into quote-unquote health care now that his deductible has gone up by 5 or 6 times and his out-of-pocket costs are much higher and his premiums much higher? So we could take this and multiply and say, hey, it really is tough for young people.
It's true. So having a college degree certainly helps you. It opens a lot of doors. Probably the worst hit are minorities that don't have college degrees, not only because they don't have skills, but because those kinds of jobs have largely shipped overseas to the third world, where you can get people who, you know, in India, for example, you can get people who speak better English than we do, and who have master's degrees at wages at which we can't hire people in the United States because it's sometimes under minimum wage. So the rest of the world is willing to compete with much better skill set for a much lower wage.
So, Megan, I want to get your take as a young person, your own experience, your peers who are out looking for jobs right now. What has been going on with them?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that my generation is such visionaries. We want to do really big things, and our parents are visionaries. They think that we'll do really big things. But as a result, we're overlooking a lot of the jobs where there really is a lot of room for us, like plumbers and electricians. And we forget the fact that a lot of people go off and they get a really amazing biology degree and they go on to be a yoga instructor, and that there's a whole set of jobs out there that could be our passion, could be amazing. But a lot of millennials don't even look at them because, well, they're not as glamorous as being a doctor, or not as good in their parents' eyes as being a lawyer. And so they end up doing degrees that need continuing education. And I'm amazed at how many of my friends have graduated and just gone on to graduate school, or graduated and gone on to a master's program, or graduated and gone on to further education in some way. And I think I'm actually in the minority of my graduating class in a job by choice. A lot of my peers didn't even apply for jobs.
So what are they doing? Back in school again?
Yeah, most of them are back in graduate school of some kind because they think that they need the graduate school in order to get a job, which I think is a little bit silly. They've already gotten a degree at a university. I'd say hang out your shingle, see if somebody will hire you before you go back for more education.
So who's telling them this? Where is this messaging come from? Or is it simply an excuse for people who just aren't ready to either grow up or make their minds up yet?
Yeah, I'm not sure which way it comes from. I think like millennials are very big visionaries. They dream big, but then I think they're also very insecure. I don't think that they believe they can achieve their dreams yet. Whereas I think I'm much more willing to dream big and try to achieve my dreams. And I want to encourage my peers that, you know, your big dream is something that another employer out there shares with you. And that if you try to get a job with them, they'll be so passionate about the fact that you're passionate.
You talk about the trades, and before we get into the major and talking about majors and the value of them and how to deal with somebody's major in college, I think about the opportunities that are in this town. There are very few people who are really good at the trades, and everyone's always keeping their little secret hoard of people. They don't want to tell other people because when they need them, they'll be busy. I mean, I've been known to do that before. And so people, if they're good at plumbing, if they could be a good, honest electrician, they could do drywall work or painting, they will be busy forever. They will have to advertise very little, and they could make a lot of money in this town being a handyman.
Right.
But you're saying that that's hard for the millennial generation to either see opportunity there or to accept?
Yeah, I think they overlook those. I know that even my husband, you know, he went off to college. Now he actually really loves all the handyman stuff. He's wanting to go back to PVCC and take all these classes that he missed. And I think he, you know, he, like me, we get swept up in the idealism of education and all of that, that we overlook the fact that, oh my gosh, there's so many jobs out there that we could train for in more of a apprenticeship model that doesn't require an educator and a teacher in front of you.
David, we were talking about this off the air, about this apprenticeship model and how I learned about real estate, which was not quite apprenticeship, but it was going and sitting in a class with a guy who was actually teaching me about real estate, as opposed to taking the state testing and licensure, which taught me nothing about the practicalities of real estate. And that's really a good way to learn, isn't it?
It is. We were talking off camera about my father, George Murata, who I learned much of my investment philosophy and financial planning management from. And mentoring under him was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. I built a business with $100 million under management before I even got my CFP. And the CFP is a lot of, it gives you a lot of buckets within which to put your knowledge, but they're empty buckets until you have an investment philosophy. And having an investment philosophy from what I consider to be a financial Rembrandt in my father really mattered much, much more than all of the education does. So I do think that kind of apprenticeship and skill that you can build, you know, it's one of the few things that you can't learn in books. You have to learn from somebody who's very good at it. And there's a lot of jobs that you can't really outsource to India. So plumber, dentist, you know, there's a lot of things you have to have someone right here in town who's going to help you with those things. And those kind of jobs are the jobs that aren't going away and are incredibly valuable. And if you learn a trade like that, in the money that you make in the 4 years of college, you can sometimes make more than a college graduate will for their degree.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely the case. I mean, I know skilled tradespeople who can go out and charge $50 or $60 an hour. And I know there's PhDs working over at Barnes & Noble right now. So it's 12:28 here on The Shilling Show, and we're talking about graduates, employers, and the job market with David Murata and Megan Russell of Murata Wealth Management. They're online at MurataOnMoney.com. Now, when we get back on the other side of the break, I want to get to the importance of majors, or maybe how you can get around a major that is not really relevant. I remember when we came here, I met a guy who had a major in French poetry, and he was having a terrible time deciding what on earth he was going to do with that. And you think, gosh, you probably ought to figure that out in advance before you invested all that time and money. But maybe there's a way out. We'll see if there's some suggestions. And then we're also going to get into how you can be a good employee. Boy, that's a lesson they ought to be teaching starting from a very young age. That's all when The Shilling Show continues. And if you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. 877-1070. Ellie stands by. 977-1070. The Shilling Show returns in just a moment.
I remember when I was a lad.
The Shilling Show continues here with Megan Russell, David Murata of Murata Wealth Management. And since it is graduation time, and we're all thinking about this for friends, family, or ourselves, as employers, graduates, employers in the job market. So let's go to this whole topic of unemployable degrees. I mean, we kind of made fun earlier of one, but I mean, there are probably a lot of them where employers would look at this on face value and say, tell me something better because this doesn't look all that impressive.
Yeah, certainly. There's a lot of ones, even as a fellow student of some of my peers, I looked at them funny and wondered why they were choosing it.
Such as, I mean, what comes to mind?
Definitely the art history kind of degrees or history. I don't know what, especially when they say they don't want to be a historian, I just don't know what direction they're planning on taking it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they don't know what direction they're planning on taking it. And a lot of times they attribute it to just one professor who's really interesting. So then you wonder, like, is your goal to be a professor or where are you headed? But I think from sitting now on the other side of the table, having gotten to interview some job candidates at Murata Wealth Management, I've realized that as an employer, what I really want to know is the story behind your major. I want to know what went through your head, why you picked it, why you're interested in both that major and my job. And so I could, now, as an employer, like I could consider hiring an art history major if the reason they liked art history is the same reason that they like my job.
So you're open to that and you're wise to it and you understand there may be a person who's of great value to your business sitting on the other side of the table. But I would imagine that there's also a bunch of people out there who would look at that and say, you're an art history major and you want to work here at this firm, has nothing to do with that. Chuck, and it goes into the circular file. You don't even get the opportunity.
What's interesting, I guess, is that passion, I think, is the thing that as an employer, I can't ever put in you. And so many of the candidates that we see are just not passionate about anything. They're not passionate about their major. They're not passionate about life. They're not passionate about my job. They're not really passionate about anything. And so just having enough passion that you're passionate about our history and my job is way better. And I know when my husband was applying for jobs, he was a religious studies major. He was applying for jobs as a tax preparer. That's
yes.
a pretty different field.
Yes, it is.
And so he wrote a really long prose description at the top of his resume, just explaining how he got from religious studies over to tax preparation. And it was the employer he ended up getting even told us, like, that paragraph was the reason that they even considered him for an interview, because he just sounded so excited about taxes in a way that nobody else was. And I think it's that passion that really gets you in front of an employer.
You can even imagine someone who's majored in French poetry and is trying to sell that major. You know, they could say, what I really enjoyed was I really enjoyed the process of research and the use of language that's involved in French poetry and the way that you can evoke emotion. And so I'm applying for your marketing department job because I really want to be able to move people with language. And that's what it takes. You know, so suddenly, you majored in French poetry, but you're applying for marketing, and it totally connects with the job that you're applying for. Well, you know, language in French, you know, French poetry is involved in language, and so many jobs involve language that you can easily make the connection to find the job that you're really passionate about. Because you were, for the same reason that you were passionate about French poetry.
You know, it's a great analysis, David, and I think it is important for people. But it goes back to this issue of passion and whether it's just disinterest or someone never taught them how to be excited about something. I don't understand. I've seen the same thing. I remember going in for job interviews and it always, you know, I wouldn't go to interviews that I wasn't interested in. So I didn't have to fake it, but I would always step my game up when I walked in to look excited about what we were talking about and to be really engaged. And it just strikes me as unthinkable that people today would go on a job interview and sit down with somebody and just be flat and dull. I mean, you certainly don't set yourself apart by doing that.
I was certainly surprised when we saw it too. I think that these people, some of them are even really, really talented, and their resume reads well, and then you sit them down in the interview and they're just not that interested. And I think they owe it to the world to find out what their passion is and be passionate in it, because they have such skill and promise that if they knew what direction to charge forward, they would do really great things. But they just don't know. I guess they just don't know yet what direction to go.
But Barbara Sher is a great author. She wrote the book, I Could Do Anything I Wanted To If I Only Knew What It Was. It's a great title, too.
It is great.
And she tells the story about someone. She helps people find their calling and their passion, and she tells the story about somebody who came in and just wasn't interested in anything. They explored a lot of different things, and she said, well, I really can't charge you because I haven't found anything. You know, and maybe they were a little interested in biology, but that wasn't really it. And then as they were leaving, the person picked up a book, and it had a big picture of a gorilla on the cover.
Yeah.
And she says, well, what are you reading? And she says, oh, it's this wonderful book. It's all about gorillas and the research they're doing with them. And her whole face lit up, and it hadn't lit up anything. And Barbara Sher said, well, that's it. That's what you have to do. You have to find a job working with gorillas. And the woman said, well, Barbara, everybody wants to work with gorillas. And Barbara said, no, everybody doesn't want to work with gorillas. That is your passion. And I don't care what it pays. You have to go work with gorillas. You have to go work with monkeys because that is your calling. And that is when you light up. And that is what you are all about. And I think a lot of students who are doing job interviews, they've been told they need to go find a job. And so they're applying for whatever job is there, and they're not that interested about it. And it's not even the right job for them, but they know they need to go find something that's going to pay the bills. And they've never really thought about what pays the bills. For parents of high schoolers, I would say that in our family, you were required to do something every summer that was vocationally oriented from the time you were basically 14.
Yeah.
And if you do that between 14 and 18, by the time you go to college, you've actually had a lot of different job experiences, and they weren't supposed to be the lifeguarding job experiences. They were supposed to be what you're passionate about.
Let's go to the phones, and there's a line open for you right now at 977-1070. Ellie stands by, and let's go to Jordan. Jordan, you're on with David Morata and Megan Russell. Thanks for calling The Chilling Show.
Thanks for having me, and for once I'm not giving an opinion. I have a question this time. I have a friend who has a son who's 26, and he was passionate about a particular subject and studied it at community college, and it didn't work out, and he just sort of lost interest. And he was living with his dad, and then his dad started saying, hey, you need to get a job and pay your own way. So he didn't like that, so he moves away and lives with his mom, and then doesn't really do much there. And now he's got this passion for physics. He wants to study physics, and this is like the third time he's done this, where he's had passion, and then it's just fizzled away, and he's still living at home, and, you know, like the song says, you're 21 and your mom still makes your bed, and that's too long. So the question is, what do you do with a guy like that? Just, I mean, the father stopped, you know, the bank of debt is closed for him. So what do you do with a young guy who's got a passion, but there's also the practical side of self-sufficiency, you know? So how do you answer that?
Let's get a response from our guests.
You know, I was really surprised nobody told me this, but I didn't realize that there was a honeymoon period even to jobs, even to your passions, that you're infatuated and then you're disappointed. And eventually, if you press through the disappointment, you'll be satisfied. And so really sounds like he needs to get some grit to stick through with one thing, because the honeymoon period is just really shocking. Even in my current job, I was infatuated with it for a while, and at about 6 months, I became disappointed with it, and it was only in pressing through that I could be satisfied on the other end.
Yeah, Barbara Sher's book, I highly recommend it, Jordan. Again, it's called I Could Do Anything I Wanted To If I Only Knew What It Was. I read it, I must have been about 40 or late 30s when I read it, and I learned new things about myself. I always thought I was a diver because I took, and she has a series of questions, and then she'll find the right chapters. I always thought I was a diver because I would take one thing and I would go deeper than 90% of the world knew about it. But I actually found out I'm a skimmer, meaning I just when I take on something, I go very deep because I'm smart and bright and love to read and a voracious learner. But I like to move on to the next thing. And there are jobs for people who are skimmers. So if his son is a skimmer, there are jobs for that. One of them is journalist. Because journalists have to go and learn a lot about a subject, and then they move on to the next subject that they're passionate about. Documentary filmmakers are the same way. They take a topic and they do films in it, and then they move on because they've covered that topic. They've made that film. So I highly recommend that book just because it does help you figure out what you are in a way that that I had never realized, that I actually like to take on new challenges, and I don't like just to stay in one thing. And it's one reason why financial planning and wealth management is a bottomless pit of new things to study. It's completely, you know, it's completely open.
Thank you.
Jordan, thanks very much for the call. That leaves the line open at 977-1070. And I would just say parenthetically, you know, to any parent out there, because I've seen it in relatives before, that, you know, parents who continue to just let the kids live with them until 20s, 30s, sometimes even 40s, you know, someday that parent's going to be gone. And that child, instead of having been helped by all this, will have been harmed because they are not able to make their own way. And then they're stuck with no way to get out of it. So these are all things to consider. Let's go. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you know you're a diver, then you need to stick to it. And if you know you're a skimmer, then you know that what you're dreaming about later moves on. And that was actually what helped me with Barbara Scher's thing, is to know that the thing that's distracting me isn't distracting me, because it may be what I'm going to be doing in 2 years as more of a skimmer. And yet that diver really needs to stick to it. And all those other things are distractions. Mm-hmm. And Barbara Scher has a series of questions to figure out which one you are and which one you should do. Because that grit is something that's learned in that, I think, that 14 to 18 range, or at least can be learned in that 14 to 18 year old range. And if it's not learned then, it's got to be learned at 26. Because then you've got to figure out, I just need to stick to something long enough to really push past and enjoy it.
But I think that is a great realization, and that some people are like that. They're going to move from thing to thing to thing. I mean, if I look at my own career, it's certainly been that. And I do lots of things all at the same time, and it's changed over the years as to what those things are. And so that's fine. But some people are not like that, and they really do need to dive in and just stick
right
with it. All right, let's go to the break. 977-1070 is the phone number. The Shilling Show continues our final segment, David Morata and Megan Russell, on graduates, employers, and the job market. Stay with us. A final segment of the Shilling Show for this hour. David Morata and Megan Russell, our guests from Morata Wealth Management, talking about graduates, employers, and the job market. Let's go back to the phones, and there is a line open for you right now at 977-1070, and we welcome Ann. Ann, you're on with David and Megan. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm 65 this year, but I consider it so lucky that I was young when I was young, because back in the 60s, there were summer jobs available for high school kids, or internships or things to do where we could get wonderful experience. What I found with my own kids, who are 40 and 32 now, is that a lot of sort of experienced workers are taking the beginner workers' jobs, and the grad kids are taking the college kids' jobs, and the college kids are taking the high school kids' jobs. And there are very few opportunities, or compared to before, and much more difficult for our guys now to be able to get those wonderful hands-on experiences that we all had. And that's one of the biggest problems, I think, with the economic slowdown that we've had. And hopefully it will turn around and we'll be able to get these kinds of apprenticeships and opportunities for people to learn what they're excited about. Because even when you have a bad experience, at least you know that that's not something you really should give your life for.
You know, it's funny, Ann, that you say that, because my dad used to send me on summer jobs like that. They were hard labor jobs, picking up cardboard and getting my hand sliced up like hamburger and carting it off of trucks. And I think the point there was, that's not something he wants to do, but he needs to learn that. And so you better pay attention in school, David.
Yeah, and you're right. My first job was at 13, and when they came time to pay me and I filled out the papers, they couldn't pay me because you had to be 14. So they held my wages all summer and didn't pay me until I turned 14. One of the difficulties with raising the minimum wage, which is in the news again now, is that people with low skills they're not worth the minimum wage, but they need to develop those job skills. And you learn so much from job skills. You learn to show up on time. You learn to take directions. You learn to know when to ask and when not to ask about something, because you're trying to be that that low maintenance employee. And that's a skill that you learn. So you're right. The summer jobs and the internships are now all taken up. And what we recommended was, you need to go do something that looks like a job and looks like a vocation. You don't necessarily need to get paid for it. So we just simply found all of the people who we knew in various fields, you know, that that our kids might be interested in and said, can they come work for free? And the working for free is more important and more valuable than getting paid for the summer. And you know, even if you're willing to pay your own kids to go get a job and work for free, that works. Or if you're willing to employ your jobs, it's why small business owners employ so many of their children, is because they're learning the family business and they're mentoring in a way that you can never learn in school. So I agree with you. It's so important that it shouldn't be flipping hamburgers or lifeguarding. It should be something to do with what you think you might want to do for a living in your vocation. And that kind of summer school is the best summer school to go to.
You know, I think about this concept, you know, of branding yourself. And I don't know if young people think about that. I have a brand that I kind of fell into, but I'm the long-haired conservative. And so when I go to these things and I go broadcast up in Washington, D.C., or I go out to Texas, you know, I'm usually the only guy that looks like this. And so most people who meet me usually remember me the following year because of my branding. And so when one of my kids who is very disturbed that I have long hair asked me to cut my hair, I say, that's my brand. I can't do that or I'll lose my branding. But this is important for everybody. Do young people think in these terms?
I don't know that the average young person does. Certainly, I majored in cognitive science, and so everybody there just thinks all the time about, you know, what is what you do socially, what is it saying about you? And so certainly in my particular group, that was a common topic, but I don't think it's a very common thing to go in and think about, but certainly has a lot of value in life, and you can realize just how everything that you do, from how you dress to how you talk to what you talk about, can actually influence the way that not just your employer sees you, but the rest of the world.
David, how do you look at it from your perspective? And we've got about a minute left.
Yeah, Megan pointed out an article to me that talked about how the best employees are positive, low maintenance, and unselfish.
Yeah.
And I think those are the three things you're going for, because as an employer, you know, you can get by without having any one of those, but if you're missing two of them, you're really in trouble with your employee. And you're hiring someone to save you time. So if they're a high maintenance, negative, selfish employee, it loses all the way around. And while I think those things are changeable, I do think you can change those things in yourself. They take a lot of time and a lot of effort. They're built over time and they're constructed. They become more parts of character. So I can take almost anyone and I can train them in wealth management, in aspects of wealth management, and make them a productive employee. But you can't train easily, at least, positive, low maintenance, and unselfish. Those are more character traits. And those take months and months. And they're months I don't want to have to put in trying to re-change an employee's character. It's possible. And if someone tries to do that with you and tries to help you be more positive, you know, bless them and thank them when they're mm-hmm. criticizing you, because they're trying to do a very good work that will make you a better person all the way around.
You know, it kind of reminds me of a dinner that I went to at a restaurant called Mavericks, which is no longer here. But some years ago, we went to dinner at Mavericks, and the manager of the restaurant was bussing the tables, and not because he was trying to get experience, but he was doing it because the employees didn't show up. And we said, what's going on? And he goes, well, their attitude is like, what are you going to do, fire me? And I knew by him saying that that's exactly what he would like to do, but it wasn't possible right now because there were no other employees.
Mm-hmm.
But it all goes back to attitude, being positive, being low maintenance and unselfish, and that's what that employer was looking for. So that concludes this hour of The Shilling Show. Megan Russell, David Murata, it's been a great discussion. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having us.